Yesterday, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham issued a new public health order.
The issue we're really working to address, in addition to supporting our economy, figuring out a way to live with this virus that is still here, but to make sure that we are able to meet our target, which is to reopen schools. And in this environment, the country isn't meeting that criteria. And quite frankly, now, New Mexico is not meeting that criteria.
Today, we are joined by New Mexico Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales to talk about the new public health order, the special session held in Santa Fe recently to deal with the budget crisis that came as a result of the economic fallout from the shutdown, and the new early childhood education department, which became effective in New Mexico just yesterday. Your questions at 575-646-2212. We'll get started right after NPR News. Good afternoon. It is 1:06. This is KC Counts, and you're listening to Voice of the Public from KRWG Public Media. And I'd like to introduce and say thank you to Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales for joining us today. Good afternoon, Lieutenant Governor.
Good afternoon. It's such an honor to be here on the show with you, and thank you for making time for me to be part of it.
Well, we have a lot of territory to cover today, I think. Starting with the governor's news conference yesterday, and I'll invite anyone listening to call with questions, 575-646-2212. You can also follow along on Facebook, and we'll be keeping up with your comments and questions there as well. Yesterday, the governor's news conference was pretty action-packed. We're holding off on phase two reopening. Why don't you explain what led the governor to that decision?
Absolutely. Last week we did a press conference on Thursday, and the plan was to move forward with phase two, opening up other areas, allowing for more activity to take place in New Mexico. But the governor, rightly so, started seeing the numbers that were creeping up in our state. Obviously, we know what's happening in our bordering states and the impact that they're having. The governor was concerned, and she put a pause on it, and that was reiterated yesterday, of the concern that we have that New Mexicans, even though we've outpaced and outperformed other states in making sure we can flatten this curve, we do see the spike that's starting to occur, and we wanted to make sure that people across the state saw the urgency and would react to it in a way that we can, over the next 2 weeks, really get back to flattening that curve.
What New Mexico just reached a grim milestone, 500 deaths. What kind of increases are we seeing in New Mexico at this point? And as I understand it, they are statewide.
That's correct. And so, you know, our hearts and our condolences and our love go out to each of those family members who have suffered a loss and death of those people who had passed away. It's very difficult to see this happening across our state and across our country. But when we look and see also with the criteria that are in place and the grading criteria specifically, New Mexico has unfortunately fallen from where we had a good handle on that, and we've slid back in many ways there. But looking specifically at the numbers that have occurred within southwest New Mexico and the I-10 corridor that we have, and the impact from where Hidalgo County just a couple weeks ago didn't have any cases and now has really seen a drastic amount of cases increase. Same way for Luna County, Hidalgo County, and Dona Ana County. And so you see this trend that's taking place, and that's what's concerned the governor as a state, is especially moving towards the school reopening, what we've got to do to keep New Mexicans safe. And she was right in showing that we need to hold off at least till July 15th to reevaluate the data.
We already have listeners waiting on the line with questions. First to Mata. Good afternoon. Welcome to Voice of the Public, Mata. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. I don't know if you mean me.
Who are you?
Mara.
Mara. Okay, Mara. Thank you for joining us. I gave you a little R roll there where there shouldn't have been one. Apologies.
I like the variation on my name.
What question do you have today?
So I live in Silver City. I really support what the governor has been doing. It's my understanding that she wants New Mexicans, if they leave the state and come back, to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Yes.
I wonder, what about people who are coming into the state? I'm seeing a lot of license plates from Texas and Arizona, and I'm concerned about community spread through people coming into the state. Is there something that can be done about that?
Before you pick up that question, Lieutenant Governor, let me just play a little bit of what the governor had to say about that during her news conference yesterday. And thank you, Mara, for the question.
We are now reapplying the 14-day mandatory quarantine for all out-of-state visitors. All right, if you're flying in, you're quarantined. You want to drive here for vacationing? You're quarantined in your room. Without these quarantines, given the spike in cases and the positivity rate, the likelihood that that comes in across our borders is incredibly high. And so we've got to adhere to this, and we are putting out that information through our tourism industry and everyone else, and we will reinforce our staffing at the airports to remind travelers that they have to meet a 14-day quarantine, and we're going to work even with our federal partners to get them to go back to their early March and April and May efforts where they did not have out-of-state travel for including their federal employees.
Lieutenant Governor, the governor did say enforcement is tricky on this. What are the keys to making this work?
Yeah, and Mara, thank you for the question. And I actually call in from Silver City as well today and appreciate the support. I think the governor was very clear on what New Mexico needs to do to ensure that we're protecting all people within the state. Of course, enforcement's going to continually be a challenge. I mean, how can you make this happen? It's going to be something that we're going to address, and we're continually putting it out there. In order to make that happen, I do believe that if there's any travel that's planned from people coming into the state to visit family, that would be discouraged. Now's not the time to be going across state lines. It is a challenge to make that happen, but if they do come across the urgency and sharing that this is what New Mexico expects, that there be a 14-day quarantine for their safety and for the safety of those around them. We've also heard from people across the state that have wanted us to close our borders and not to allow any travel come through New Mexico. And that's a bigger discussion with the federal government because we do have interstates that go through. So that is a separate discussion there. But as I indicated in my early points, the travel that comes through, I do think that there's a correlation, especially when we see the increase in southwest and southern New Mexico. I think that this is something that's very real, and it's upon each of us to make sure that we're vigilant, making sure that if there is abuses taking place, that we also do our part to let people know and notify that this is happening so we can address that.
And Carol is holding on the line with a two-part question. Good afternoon, Carol. Welcome to Voice of the Public.
Hi. My question has to do with the people who are out of work, many of them in low-paying jobs throughout the area, the whole state, who are reaching a point where paying the rent is difficult. I wonder what the state has in place to help them and how you get the message out to those people. And then the second group I'm very concerned about is those out there in West Amador that are homeless. Between Community of Hope and Gospel, they can house about 85, and they are fed, but there's a whole lot of people out there in this heat, probably in the hundreds, and I hear nothing in the news about them. So those are just two questions about kind of the people that are the most in need in our area.
Okay. Lieutenant Governor, thank you, Carol.
Yeah, thank you so much, Carol, for mentioning that, and especially for advocating for vulnerable citizens within our communities that could very easily be forgotten about. I know that I've personally worked with Community of Hope and worked with other agencies to assist as best we can, but there is that concern, right, that's there. And I think your advocacy really brings it out with the many issues that we deal with, that there's still more that we can always do. So I know in collaboration in our daily calls with the governor and our cabinet, these are things that we continually talk about what needs to be done and what action needs to take place. And it goes into the second part of your question on the unemployment piece. The unemployment side of it, as we know, has impacted New Mexico just as it's impacted every single state in this country. It was a system that was not adequate to meet the demand that was there, and there was a lot of frustrations and a lot of challenges. And speaking with Secretary McCamley, he's advocated for some changes, whether it was longer hours of staff to be available for phone calls, upgrading our web system, increasing and expanding the weeks of benefits that are there for those who are coming upon their expiration of unemployment benefits. Those are all things that we're working on in collaboration to make sure we're talking with our federal government. We have a wonderful delegation who's out there, and I know that Xochitl Tota Small is continually checking in, making sure what they can do. And it's absolutely vital that that CARES Act, the possible stimulus that can come in, I believe, in the Senate, to also provide much-needed resources and support, especially for those who are coming in the unemployment, late stages of the unemployment benefits.
Where, I know it's hard for people right now just to get through on that line. Where is the best place for resources for all of the help that is available to New Mexicans?
I get this question often, and I thought that was part of the vision that the governor had from the very beginning when we experienced this in mid-March, was to have a one-stop shop website that can be directed, easy to attain and easy to be able to get information, whether it's on enforcement, whether it's on testing sites, whether it's on unemployment. That website is newmexico.gov. And by going to newmexico.gov, you're going to be able to go in and to see and to get information that would help you and navigate through a complex system. Because as we said, that this is a pandemic that none of us expected and something that we're working through as best we can using data and science to give us the information on what decisions we should make.
I want to get back again briefly to yesterday's news conference and touch on the enforcement the governor mentioned in terms of mask wearing. Here's a little bit.
If it gets worse, then you have to roll back like most of the other states with these huge spikes are doing. They roll back. What happens to businesses when you roll back? They're barely keeping afloat today. A safe reopening is respectful and fair to those businesses, but that means you have to wear a mask and they have to do COVID safe practices. If we don't do that, then the only recourse is to roll back. So businesses, you must require customers to wear face coverings. If you don't require them to wear face coverings, then there's a penalty to the owner of the business. Violators putting our state at risk are subject to a $100 fine. In the same way, you're subject to a fine if you don't have a seatbelt.
Lieutenant Governor, it feels like this was a long time coming, something that the governor really didn't want to go to, but here we are now. So what can you say to business owners and individuals about enforcement of wearing our face coverings?
Yeah, we're all in this together, and that you're exactly right. We wanted to make sure that we can put the expectation out there, but not necessarily follow with the enforcement piece unless absolutely necessary. We've seen what's happened, and I use examples of Texas and Arizona, where now they're mandated in many areas of that because of the impact that it's seen right there. The next 2 weeks are so critical. And even though it may be questioned, how are you going to enforce that or how are you going to impose a penalty, we have to, as New Mexico and New Mexicans, take a strong stance on that and making sure that over these next 2 weeks, if we can get a better handle of that, that's going to be instrumental in continuing to keep business opening, continue to opening more businesses and getting our kids back into the school setting. Because when you see the devastation that's occurring right now in the healthcare system in other states, the businesses that have been allowed to open only to be shut down again, businesses aren't going to be able to withstand that. And we as New Mexicans have the opportunity and the possibility to really change course and to really get our numbers where they need to be by doing our part. Wearing a mask, washing your hands, socially distancing yourself. And I know that it's easily said, but we're at a point now with the urgency that it has to be done because our lives are dependent on it.
Yesterday, the governor touched a little bit on back to school. Here's what she had to say.
The issue we're really working to address, in addition to supporting our economy, figuring out a way to live with this virus that is still here, but to make sure that we are able to meet our target, which is to reopen schools. And in this environment, the country isn't meeting that criteria, and quite frankly now, New Mexico is not meeting that criteria.
Before we jump into that subject, because it's a big one, a reminder that the number you can call with your questions for Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales on Voice of the Public today is 575-646-2212, 646-2212. We thank you for listening. We thank you for participating today. Back to school, so many question marks, Lieutenant Governor. Where do we stand?
There are so many question marks. And as we stand today, the governor and the Public Education Department has issued a hybrid model of what we're going to do to plan a reentry into the schools. And this is extremely personal to me because I was an educator, I was a coach, and I'm a parent. And the concerns are valid that parents and educators have. This hybrid model will allow us the opportunity to safely and responsibly re-engage those students and faculty into the school setting. Going Monday and Tuesday, for example, half of the population of students going to class while the other half is doing remote learning. Wednesday, for example, giving time for disinfecting, sterilization of the class. And then Thursday, Friday, the other cohort go in while the first group will get remote education. There's no substitute. We know what the impact of education is. There's no substitute for that in-person instruction. And I think that we as a state understand that we owe this to our children to get them into the classroom in the full capacity as possible. But we have to do that in a safe way. And it hasn't necessarily hit the numbers that we need to meet that gating criteria to know at this point that we're absolutely 100% safe. And because of that, that's why the governor made the comments yesterday that if we want to move in this direction, we need to make sure the numbers are going in an opposite direction to flatten the curve.
What will you do to make sure that your teaching staff, especially those with underlying conditions, are kept safe?
In constant communication that's going on with local districts and to make sure that we do keep our staff safe, making sure that there's temperature checks, consistent monitoring of any COVID symptoms, rapid response testing, the surveillance testing that's going to be necessary, and for districts to also work collaboratively with their educators. If there's any symptoms or any complaints of risk possible to health and to impacts of family members, that they take that into consideration and provide alternative ways for them to do their job while staying safe. This is, again, discussions that will continue to go on. I know when we release this plan on Thursday, I know that there's been continual discussions every single day to make sure districts understand and what us as a state can do to support them. Personal protective equipment is just as important for our educators as they were for our healthcare workers. And these are the type of things that the state, fortunately, with the work of the legislature and some of the stimulus CARES Act money coming in, that we can help our school districts meet the demand to keep people safe.
Let's go to Kevin now at 646-2212, 575-646-2212 for Voice of the Public here from KRWG Public Media. Good afternoon, Kevin. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I want to let your guests know that I do support what the governor's doing as well. I think she's doing a great job. But I wanted to ask, going back to the spike, especially in the southwest part of the state, Hidalgo County, Luna County, have you looked into the impact of border wall construction workers on those spikes? Because there's a lot of activity out there. I was out there the other day. There's construction going on in Doñana County, Luna County, around Columbus, and probably down the Boot Heel as well in Hidalgo. And those workers, I didn't see many of them wearing masks. And I know a lot of them are from out of state. They probably go home on the weekend, you know, maybe I don't know where they're from, but...
Well, one thing is true, Kevin. Construction is one of those areas where we saw one of the biggest spikes in the coronavirus cases, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm sorry for interrupting you. I'll let you finish your question.
Well, that's it. I just wondered if the Lieutenant Governor has looked into that, the impact of border wall construction workers and the recent spikes in those counties.
Go ahead, Lieutenant Governor.
Yep. Kevin, thank you for that, and thank you for bringing up that point as far as work on the border wall, because I personally engaged in that at the request of the governor, and then my involvement and my awareness of Southwest and Southern New Mexico, she had me take on that into in Columbus to make sure that the man camps that were being set up there were not going to be allowed to do so until the numbers increased, and to make sure we're not putting Columbus residents and others in harm's way, because many of those employees, as you said, were coming from out of state. It took collaborative efforts and communication with many advocates, with the mayor. Mayor Salas out of Columbus was so instrumental to make sure he protected his people. So I know this issue well, and I know that when the governor wanted me to make sure that we weren't going to allow this to move forward, that we were going to do it with in mind of keeping people safe. This is, unfortunately, we've seen that there's other construction going on within the border wall, and we would encourage and advocate that that be stopped, because the reality of it is this isn't the emergency that we need to be focusing on when we talk about the border wall. We need to talk about the health and safety and well-being issue that we're dealing with, and the health pandemic that we're under. That needs to be the focus, not the focus of building a border wall. And so I do think there's a correlation, not only with that construction piece. We've also seen, in talking with local leaders, for example, the mayor of Lordsburg, who also has a concern because we have a lot of minors who go across state lines and they come back and live in the community. But by going back and forth, that's also maybe a reason and an impact that we see growing numbers in those areas too. So there's a lot of things that are variables that are moving there. But you're right on in saying that anytime you have more exposure to people in other states, this is the impact that we're seeing here in New Mexico.
646-2212. That's 575-646-2212. Thank you for joining us today on Voice of the Public. We actually have I want to talk to my two Teds who are holding on the line, just so that one of you doesn't get confused and hang up. There are two Teds waiting to speak to the Lieutenant Governor. So we'll call you Ted 1. How is that? Good afternoon.
Hi. Am I Ted 1?
Yes, you are Ted 1.
Okay. You want my question now?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I'm hearing a lot of talk about, you know, the governor's enforcing these measures to protect us, but I don't understand how exactly it works. Are businesses supported? You know, how are businesses supported that get resistance to people wearing masks or distancing? Is it a local police responsibility? Do citizens turn people in, take pictures? The business owners have the responsibility of apprehending people who are, or, you know, turning people in who are not wearing masks. How does this work specifically?
Go ahead, Lieutenant Governor. You know, obviously business owners aren't being asked to apprehend anyone, right?
That's correct, and thank you, Ted, for that question, because that's going to continually be something that we will grapple with, is how do you enforce this? Again, is that the expectation has been set out there. We expect people in all public areas to wear a mask because of the effectiveness that it's shown and proven in helping us to flatten the curve. But you're right, we don't want to go in and we don't want to put any business owner, any employee in harm's way. We saw how there was at the Walgreens there in Las Cruces, there was an incident where a person was hit. We don't want that to happen, but we also recognize that we're all in this together, and it's all of our responsibility to make sure that we're adhering to that. So businesses are expected, that customers that come in, that there is no services that will be provided to them if they can't provide a mask or show that they have some health condition for not being able to do so. But we also would ask local law enforcement to help out. And I know specifically my local district attorney stated that they don't have any jurisdiction to do so. But we do believe that there is jurisdiction for local law enforcement in collaboration with our mayors and our counties and our sheriffs to help us to enforce this, because we don't want to fine people. We don't want to have that be impacted on people who are struggling already financially. But we also want to make sure that people understand that this is a simple ask that's being done to keep people safe, and you're expected to do so.
All right, let's go to Ted 2 now, holding on the line. Good afternoon, Ted. Thank you for joining us on Voice of the Public. Go ahead.
Lieutenant Governor, it's your friend Ted from Silver City. this whole endemic reminds me of the day when we instituted seatbelts and all the commotion over how they're stealing my constitutional rights. Why do I have to put a seatbelt on? Well, the traffic commission started to get aggressive and started putting pictures of what happens in an accident when people do not wear seatbelts. I think we need to get more aggressive because so many people are relaxed, even here in Silver City, about masks. We need to promote what happens. I don't want to sound like the Grim Reaper, but we need to talk about what the real effects are of this flu leading to people to die from it. We don't emphasize that enough as far as I'm concerned. So I just want to throw that out.
Okay, Ted, thank you very much for your comments. And next at 575-646-2212, let's go to Christine. Good afternoon, Christine. Thank you for calling. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I guess a bit of a comment and maybe turning into a question here. You know, I love what your other callers are having to say. Thank you. Thank you also for this opportunity. You know, at Silver City, I see a lot of responsibility there. And I congratulate our governor on saying, hey, we all need to wear a mask. I do have a problem, though. We have a great big Walmart in Silver City, and I am amazed that they have gotten away with, you know, there's many people that go in there and have masks on, but there's a good number that don't. And I think they need to be held accountable as well. We have Albertsons and many other fine businesses. You don't get in there without a mask. So I do believe Walmart, who we need to go to as well for many different things, they need to become responsible too. So, you know, I don't know how this is dealt with. Obviously, they're a big corporation, and I do have to frown on it. There are people at the door counting, hey, you can come in or you can't come in. So I think this has to be enforced all the way down to they shouldn't be running out of products to wipe your hands, this, that. I think it should be there. I think they need, they're a huge corporation business. They need to set an example. And I hope this is enforced at their establishment as well.
Yeah. Well, consistency across the board has certainly been one of the great struggles so far. And just yesterday, Lieutenant Governor, the governor was talking about those corporate partnerships and how they are in communication. And she was talking about some pretty scary anecdotal stories about people being asked to come to work sick. You know, businesses, you know, not, people will be walking around with their masks in their pocket instead of on their face. What can you say about the corporate partners?
Yeah, I see that, and I appreciate the call and the concerns that was with that specific establishment. I was hearing some concerns as well, and so last night I actually personally went for myself to see what was taking place, and I know that there was some calls that were made reaching out to their governmental affairs representatives, not only at the local level but the regional level, and I was glad to see that some changes have occurred where all employees, as of last night, were still wearing masks. There wasn't as many people in the store at that time. It was later in the evening, but yesterday the governor was clear that this is now a mandate. All businesses and all customers must now wear this. And if they're not in compliance, if any organization, any business isn't in compliance, that's where the enforcement piece comes in. And I know that it's difficult. I went to pick up some dinner last night to support our local businesses, and I saw, unfortunately, two of the employees who were serving having their mask under their chin. And I made mention, not as a lieutenant governor, just as a citizen of the state of New Mexico, and said they're not being worn properly. You need to enforce that they do so. So today's a different day because there is no question about it. There is an enforcement. There is a mandate, and the governor and each of us are expecting and depending that everyone abides by that. Again, I stress the fact the next 2 weeks are so critical that we have to make sure and wrap our hands around that by doing the simple yet effective things to make it happen.
Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales on Voice of the Public today on KRWG. I can't believe we have already burned through a half hour, half of our hour together, and we still have some pretty important topics to jump into. But I want to jump back to the phone. Jeffrey is calling with a question. Good afternoon, Jeffrey. Thanks for checking in today.
Hey, thanks, Casey, for doing this. I really appreciate our Lieutenant Governor and our Governor and support every acts that they are demanding of us, and I think it's helping us stay well, those of us that are following the rules. My quick question, I'm not sure it's appropriate. Are plastic clear shields as effective as masks, cloth masks?
Good question. I see a lot of talk about that because people are interested in maybe using them personally.
Yes.
Right. So yes. What can you say about that, Lieutenant Governor?
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure I heard that correctly. So it was our face shields is effective as masks. Is that what the question was?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, yeah. And so I think this is something that, you know, I've had discussion with people from there in Las Cruces who would prefer their businesses be allowed to wear face shields. And I've had discussions where there's some science to say that the masks are more effective. The reality of it is both of them are needed, whether it's a face shield, a face mask, any face covering, that's going to help to make sure the droplets remain, keeping people safe as well as keeping yourself safe. I don't want to get into which is more effective and which one's better to do. I think, again, utilizing any of those approaches will be helpful from spreading the virus. Personally speaking, as an educator and as a parent, I know how important that body language is in learning and communicating and connecting. So I personally support the use of face shields where you can still see the gestures and see those important elements that necessarily couldn't be seen with the mask. But as I go out in the public or do different events, I wear my face mask just because I feel a little more comfortable. I feel it's a little bit more easier to maneuver. But both of them, bottom line, I think are needed, and I would hope and encourage people, whatever they're comfortable with, that they wear some type of face covering.
All right. We did receive a couple of questions by email before airtime today, and one of those is regarding Gila Regional Medical Center recently having lost its CEO, Taffy Arias. The email says, quote, since then, the interim CEO, Scott Manis, has been closing services. The behavioral health unit has converted nurses to on-call workers, furloughed the ICU director, all of the BHU staff, all to give the appearance that the hospital is making money. From what I have observed is that the tenor of the hospital staff is that of passengers on the Titanic. The closure of the BHU was purported to be a result of hiring a nurse practitioner to run it instead of a medical doctor. Now, let me get to the questions. Would you comment and provide an update on what is happening with GRMC and future plans, and what is the future of the behavioral health unit?
Thank you for that question. And this is something that's very personal to me because I used to be an administrator there at Gila Regional Medical Center. And looking at patient care and patient satisfaction scores was a job that I did. And so it was always important that we always were patient-centered. Knowing the issues that have happened at Gila Regional, I've been very disappointed to see the direction that it's gone in. I've been advocating for years, even when I was an employee there, that the hospital needed to go critical access and making sure that you would get the full reimbursements for the services that you're providing. Critical access is for hospitals that are under a certain bed capacity. Gila Regional is being served as an acute hospital because it's a 68-bed hospital facility, even though the numbers that they consistently see are at the critical access point. So I've always stated, get to the critical access designation, get full reimbursement to help with these services. It's unfortunate with the behavioral health unit because I was very close to the behavioral health unit and the workings that were there. My ex-wife was actually the psychiatrist who just recently left to go take another position. And it was unfortunate that the advice that was given by the former CEO and the CFO in place felt that it was appropriate to utilize a nurse practitioner in that position. And it's nothing against a nurse practitioner. I believe that she's done a wonderful job. She's been there doing what's been asked. But as far as any reimbursements and in place of what's happening for critical access survey and designation, there was concern that that wouldn't be allowed. So they did close it. They've assured that it's going to be a closed temporarily, and it has to be, because what happened in the state of New Mexico under Cesar Martinez's administration, when we dismantled our behavioral health system, that has been one of the most detrimental and had the most effect on impacts of society issues that we're dealing with. We can't let that happen for Southwest New Mexico, and they have to get up and running. They have to make sure that they're providing that service. But I'd also advocate for the employees, too. Because if employees are put on furlough and are being put on furlough or on call, if it's better to put them on, make sure that they can get unemployment benefits, that's important because they have to take care of their families too, or else we're going to lose those professionals to other communities and other states. So the future of Gila Regional is very important to every single person in Southwest New Mexico, and I would continue to support them and whatever they need to help to get to that critical access designation.
Recently, the county commission decided not to take over control of the hospital and instead to look for a new CEO. Do you know if there's been any progress?
I know that the commission had weighed in. Do they look to take over the board of trustees as a whole? And they chose, of course, not to do that, even though they're on the interim basis right now. I do think that it's important that whenever they're balancing out who's going to be the leader of the hospital, that that person has an understanding, not only of the healthcare side, but also the community, to have an understanding that this community deserves a CEO who's going to be invested and involve in the community efforts to know what is important and what is needed to provide these services. Again, Gila Regional provides over 500 jobs within the community of Grant County in Southwest New Mexico, but more so it provides a small town hospital with large city services. And we have to maintain that because that's what it means for quality of life. That's what it means for a strong economy. And that's what it means for a New Mexico that can thrive moving into the future.
All right, let's get back to the phone. 575-646-2212. This is Voice of the Public on KRWG. I'm KC Counts, and I'm joined today by Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales. And we are joined by Susan, who's holding
I'm
with a question.
I'm trying to figure it out.
Hi, Susan. Are you there?
Oh, sorry.
No problem. Welcome to Voice of the Public. Do you have a question for us?
Well, I didn't. I wanted to listen in. I just got home and discovered this was happening, so I'm just now listening in. I may have a question as we go forward.
Okay, Susan. Well, thanks so much. It's nice to know you're listening. Where are you listening today?
Silver City.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us. So obviously, one important topic for Silver City residents there, the Gila Regional Medical Center. And just one more question there, Lieutenant Governor, before we move on. Do you think the county should take a more active role in managing the hospital?
Well, I think that there needs to be the collaborative effort, and the county is one of the only counties that does have a county-owned hospital. I think there needs to be collaborative efforts, and at the same time is to ensure that those people you have in place are going to do what's proper for the hospital and making the decisions that are important for long-term solvency. But I do also feel that when there's an element of non-transparency and there's an element of things that are being done, for example, of an extension of a contract right on the onset for previous CEO that really could be costly to the organization and to the community, I do think that it's within the commissioner's right to ask these questions and to be given answers. So it's a balancing point, but I do think that the direction the commission has gone is something that I fully support.
All right. Now, yesterday during the governor's news conference, she was sporting a mask with the logo of the Early Childhood Education Department. Became effective just yesterday. Tell us about the evolution of that department from its beginning.
What a wonderful transition. Thank you for mentioning the mask and mentioning the department, because this is something that has been meaningful to me as well. With many advocates that we have, Engage New Mexico, Voices for Children, so many people who have been a part of it. And when I was in the Senate, it's one of those things that what if we did something differently? And as I sat in the Senate Finance Committee in 2015, I heard the presentation given by CYFD at that time that stated that the state had to turn back $22 million of federal dollars because they went unexpended. And in a state where we're 50th in child well-being, our education system had been struggling, and we see the impact there. There's no reason whatsoever we should have had to revert $22 million. And it came apparent to me was that early childhood education was spread out over five agencies. And when you have that, it doesn't mean the agencies didn't value it, but there was other pressing issues. For example, CYFD protection and enforcement of children was at the forefront of what they had to do. So I spoke with people from my community, Western New Mexico University, Shannon Rivetta, Anita Rios, Terry Anderson, and asked them as professionals, what do you think and how could we make this a reality? When Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham got elected and we were about to take the stage to do our inauguration, she notified me that in her speech, she was going to show her support for the early learning department. And I knew at that point that we were going to make this a reality and change the direction that we've seen in New Mexico for far too long. And I'm excited because as this weekend, as we celebrate America's birthday, this week we also got to celebrate the birth of a new department that's going to have significant impact in collaboration with public education department and higher education department.
What are some of the first things we'll see from this department? How will people's lives be touched directly?
Well, there's going to be definitely a focus is going to be on how we can utilize resources without overlapping them. So collaboration, obviously, between the four agencies that I mentioned earlier that used to oversee early childhood education, the collaboration that's going to be there and working together to make sure it's a seamless transition. We do have a wonderful cabinet secretary who has vast experiences in Head Start and other childhood programs and is working with local communities about shared services, meaning that eliminating a lot of the overhead or the administrative side of it and use the services to be a shared component to save dollars that can go directly towards programming, you're going to see some of that take place as well. There's still a whole lot of work to be done on top of being in a pandemic, but I do feel strongly in the team that's in place right now and the work and the efforts that have been done by professionals in early childhood education here in the state of New Mexico. So good things in store for us.
Was funding for the department affected at all by the recent special session of the New Mexico legislature?
There was some impact, and when we had a $2 billion shortfall that we had to address, it was important that we did have each department take part in some of those adjustments there. Although the governor continually advocates for education as a whole and early childhood where it wasn't as impacted as much, but yet there still was somewhat of an impact, but it'll still move forward. I don't think it'll have much of a detriment.
Right. We'll talk a little bit more about all of the things that came out of the special session in just a moment, but I want to get back to the phone now. Luann is holding on the line, 575-646-2212, the number to call and be part of Voice of the Public on KRWG today with Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales. Hi, Luann. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thank you for answering my question. I was wondering about the travel restrictions that have been placed, about how that affects our area in Las Cruces and, you know, Anthony and everything, because we're so close to El Paso and we have a lot of people that depend on people coming back and forth between the two cities. Like, is that also for El Paso, or are they considered to be kind of like part of us?
Great question. So we have so many people who travel back and forth across the state line as an everyday thing. But so that wouldn't necessarily be impacted. Is that correct, Lieutenant Governor?
Well, and that's a tough one right there, is because you have so many communities that are so close in proximity and some that work in different areas. So that is a tough one right there. You know, the suggestion I give is that at all possible, making sure that you're taking every precaution in place, even more so important to wear a mask and making sure that you can self-quarantine if you feel that there was ever any danger, because it's just something that it's almost impossible to 100% get it right. But if the effort is there and minimizing the exposure and minimizing the impact, I think is only going to be beneficial to the people in the state of New Mexico, as well as those family members who they live with.
All right. Another couple of comments coming in here on Facebook from people who are following along on Facebook. Thank you, Mary, who says she lives in Hidalgo County, and they are concerned about the lack of leadership in Lordsburg when it comes to discouraging parties COVID broke out after grad parties, and there will be 4th of July parties. And she says people are not being smart and is wondering about communication with leadership in those areas. Another smaller town that comes to mind from earlier on in this pandemic was the city of Grants. And the mayor there just coming right out and saying he was going to defy the governor's health order. How does the governor deal with those types of issues?
You know, it's a position that we're in, that we're going to make decisions that aren't going to make everyone happy. I can speak specifically to Hidalgo County and the constant communication that I have within the leadership of the county and the city, and asking for assistance and giving us some information that's vital, whether it's they're requesting that there be some rapid testing, some surveillance testing, because there was a concern of some outbreaks that may have occurred and, in fact, did occur. There has been that communication that's been there and the efforts to do so. I have encouraged those local governments to pass their own ordinances and to make sure that they make things mandatory before even the governor made masks mandatory. I asked them to do so. I'm not sure if that had taken place, but they're right. And I received personal phone calls asking us to kind of bend the rules for a small community who didn't have very many or zero COVID cases at the time and allow graduation to take place as normal. And we couldn't do it because we're going to be consistent, whether it's a high school in Waggamon to a high school in Albuquerque or Hidalgo County. And we didn't allow that, but you can't control people's behaviors, and the parties went on. And from what we understand, that there was some infection that occurred with that. But I do think that they understand, the local leaders understand, that we need to take this seriously. And now my request to them is they have to assist in the enforcement piece, because that's the only way we're going to get a handle of that. We only have limited amount of state police that's going to go from community to community. We need to help them out. As in regard to Grants, and we did hear, and the mayor got a lot of publicity, and I think that in many circles he was patted on the back. But the reality of it is it was very far and few between people who had that kind of approach, because for the most part our mayors, our county commissioners, our local leaders have worked hand-in-hand with us, maybe not agree with everything that we've done, but they've all understood that we're in this together and that they weren't out seeking the headlines. So I like to focus on those that have done their part to keep their community safe rather than trying to get the headlines for personal reasons.
I'll say that that kind of reflects what Malcolm said on Facebook. I feel people in Las Cruces are really very good about wearing masks. I'm really impressed, and I wish the government message would include acknowledgement and congratulations for our citizens' efforts.
I'm glad to hear that from Malcolm, and we echo that.
It is almost 1:52, so we just have a few minutes left. Let's quickly talk about the special session and tell me how they fixed the budget crisis.
Well, I don't know if the budget crisis was necessarily fixed because it's ongoing. New Mexico was hit from two angles. One is that we saw the impact of COVID, not only in New Mexico, but across the country. But the other part of it is New Mexico is so reliant on oil and gas revenue. And when your budget is built on the revenue that was projected to come in, and then there's a worldwide crash that even sent that revenue into the negative, we had to make adjustments. And I just want to make sure people know in New Mexico, we can't have a deficit. We're not like the federal government who can run a deficit budget. We have to make sure we have a balanced budget. So we had a shortfall, and we came in and we made some changes to that with the idea in mind that our communities are hurting. So support was given to local governments. Support's given because they lost some taxes that would come in through gross receipts. Support given to our small businesses. And that's going to be developed more as the governor signed that into law this week. You're going to have more information that's going to be shared with local governments, with small businesses to provide some relief. And again, it was a collaborative effort. As intense as the discussions were and how different the session was, I commend legislators on both sides of the aisle for being respectful, for making sure that we addressed the issues that we needed to and got out of there safely without people being affected with the virus.
The governor vetoed, what was it, about $30 million of cuts? What were those cuts to? And so she's restored funding for what exactly?
Yeah, and the governor is very clear from the day that she took office is that education is going to be what we build our administration on. And she wanted to make sure, and some of the cuts that were going to be impacted on the education piece that we would provide some of those funds there rather than go through the effect of the budget that would have cut that. I know the legislature calls it sanding, but in many ways we've been sanded for so many years, it's just another term for cut. And she wanted to protect education as much as possible and to allow for more resources to go into those schools, especially as they need to provide for their employees to keep them safe, to provide PPE and other measures to ensure we can move into a full reopening.
One other thing that came out of the special session was the body cam requirement for law enforcement agencies around the state. Does that cover every law enforcement agency?
It does, and I think that that's something that did have a lot of debate and a lot of discussion with that, but the public has spoken. The public wants to make sure there's accountability, and we want to make sure that we can keep people safe and that people should know that any interaction with the law enforcement is documented, is accountable, and that we never have the case of what happened with George Floyd happen in the state of New Mexico. And this is assurance to the public that we're going to have accountability go both ways to make sure that every encounter is going to be done in a way that's safe. Again, as these are tough issues. These are tough discussions that had to take place. But at the end, I believe that the state was responsive to what we've seen the public in New Mexico and the public across the country demanding.
Is there a timeline on when we could expect for every law enforcement agency in New Mexico to have these body cameras working?
I think that there's, fortunately, a majority of New Mexico law enforcement already has that in place. What we want to make sure and to provide some assistance because we don't want unfunded mandates. And so that'll be worked out to make sure there's assistance there, as well as the digital component of it, because it does take a lot of the technology piece to make sure that you're storing that recorded and that captured video. So there's still some work to be done there, but I would expect the sooner the better for that to be done, because again, this is something that's so important that we have accountability in all levels of government.
Let's talk a little bit about voting, because that was another issue on the table during the special session. The governor wanted to be able to send New Mexicans ballots. Registered voters would receive ballots, but that's not going to happen. Tell us what is going to happen to make voting during what we can only assume might be a continued pandemic a little bit easier.
It could be, and I used to serve as a county clerk, so I know, and I can tell you the most stressful job that I've ever had was overseeing an election, because so many things can go wrong. I can't imagine what county clerks are experiencing, and I give my hats off to them during the primary election to do all that they did to keep people safe and have their vote counted. And that's what it comes down to. Bottom line is we want to make sure everybody has access to their vote being counted and how that's being done. So county clerks now have the authority to make the determination of what would happen as far as sending those ballots to people, whether it's through mail, if it's automatic, or if that's going to be done something through a request absentee ballot. There was an added component that was put in there that's going to get a lot of discussion when we get into the general session, and it was dealing with the idea of open primaries. So there was some changes that occurred right there that may have people have the opportunity on election day designate a party that they're going to be part of and to vote on that. That is more effective for the primary election, obviously, because in the general, anyone can vote. But you're going to see a lot more discussion take place once we get into January session on that particular amendment.
One more email question that's going to circle us back to education here in our last couple of minutes. My daughter has emotional special needs. She attended schools in two southern New Mexico districts. She received very poor support. As a result, she did not finish high school. I know Governor Lujan Grisham has put more money towards schools, but what else is planned to improve our schools? I know the repairs have not been made. Thank you, Barbara.
I want to thank Barbara for doing that and advocating. Just as a little while ago, we had advocates who spoke up for the homeless, who spoke up for those who have lost unemployment benefits, because it is your advocacy that really makes a difference. And when we continue to deal with many issues, never to forget those most vulnerable in our communities. As a special education teacher, knowing all that it entails to educate that child, not as a method of standardizing, but as individualizing it, no better way to do that than through the special education portion of it. if it's done correctly. And so I watch this very closely, and I know the governor does too. We do have, responsibility as a state, because we weren't meeting the needs of at-risk students. We weren't meeting the needs of children from diverse backgrounds. And as a court mandate, we need to do that. And so more has to be done. And I would hope that these experiences that Mary has and others have, that special education isn't adequate, that they know they have rights as parents, and they need to make sure and demand those rights. And I'm always available as Lieutenant Governor, as a former educator, to be here to stand in their corner, because those children deserve the education just like anyone else across the state of New Mexico.
And you've mentioned a couple of times along the way getting PPE into schools. Do schools currently have stockpiles of PPE for their educators, or is that something that we're still working on?
That'll be something that we'll continually evaluate, because one of the main issues that we dealt with when we got into this pandemic, Governor was very adamant, and she was right in saying that we had to make sure that we had enough hospital beds, we had to make sure that we had PPE for our healthcare providers, and then we have to make sure that we had testing that was going to be available. That hasn't changed, and even though it may shift in some ways to expand to educators, we still have to make sure that we have PPE available. That personal protective equipment is so valuable, and we want to get that that assessment of where districts are at and utilize some of the CARES Act funding for help and expenses with that for our educators. We also want to make sure that there's testing that's available for that surveillance or rapid response need that may arise, and then to make sure that we also have our healthcare facilities ready to go should there be outbreaks, and should there be what's happening in Texas and Arizona and California, where they're now limited capacity and having to decide which patient has to be treated. We don't want to get to that point in New Mexico. And it reiterates the fact of washing your hands, staying socially distant, and wearing a mask or face covering is the way that we can get out of this.
Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales, thank you so much for joining us for Voice of the Public today. We are out of time. It's been great.
Thank you so much.
And NPR News is on the way. So is Leora Zeitlin.